Hey, how you doing? This is Wade with Wade for Wireless from wadeforwireless.com. And today I want to thank Tower Safety for being a sponsor. I really appreciate all that they do. TowerSafety.com. Look them up today. They're based in Phoenix, Arizona for all your tower training, tower and rescue training, OSHA, and safety. Look them up on the website, TowerSafety.com. What I want to talk about today, what does it mean to underbid? That's what I want to discuss because underbidders are a problem. Low bid, there could be a low bid for a lot of reasons. So I made a little checklist here for low bid. Could have been they had a fair bid for the work. They understand the work. They know they can do it for a good price. That could be a low bid. They could have the best process for the work. Some people, even though they do good work, they just don't have all the proper processes that make it more cost efficient. Takes a little bit of time to do that. That could be why they're low bid. It could be they're local. They have no travel built in. That could be why they're low bid. Could be that they've done it before. They know the customer. They know exactly what to do for the customer, and you could be low bid. Now let's talk about underbidders. Underbidders will do it to steal work from the competition. I get it. I've seen it. I see it quite often. Underbidders may want to get in with a customer really bad, so they're willing to cut costs to get in with them. I get that too. Underbidders may want to make it up in change orders. I've seen that a lot in my time. Underbidders want to show what their company can do by getting the work and sacrificing margin on this one job. I see that quite a bit. Okay, so maybe the contractor just doesn't know any better. I wouldn't call that underbidding. I would call that a learning experience. That happens quite a bit. Sometimes you think you can go there, you can do it all in, let's say, one trip, and it winds up being three or four trips just because you have a learning curve. That happens when you're entering a new field or, say, a new line of work that your company can do. However, some underbidders have no intention of paying their contractors. Very common. Now, before I get into all of this, let's go over about a national wireless offer because I just want to make it clear about all the layers. This is why underbidding is so interesting because you have all these layers of contractors. See, you have the customer. They put it out to bid nationally, regionally, whatever. Then they could go with a national turf vendor or a regional vendor, something like that. Then that vendor would go to a local vendor, find contractors in a local market. And then finally, then you have your tower crews, your RF engineer, your drive teams, all your local teams. And that's where you have all your, say, your local teams or your teams that win the work. That's how it would work. So that's basically how it's set up today's world. Each layer takes a cut of the profit. If you know what I mean, each vendor, each contractor, they're looking for their cut and they're going to add value in the way that they manage it, or at least some do. Some don't, some do. But we'll get into that a little later. Just think about that. Now, the customer likes a single point of contact. No matter where you are in the food chain, they like a single point of contact most of the time. Some customers do like to talk to people in the field when they feel they need a legitimate update. But for the most part, they really just want to deal with one person most of the time. That's sort of how it works. We'll talk about the bad first. Some underbidders have no intention of paying their contractors, and it just so happens so often in the wireless industry that so many vendors don't want to trickle down the money. I always think that those people will go away, but they seem to reemerge. It's like people that run unsafe crews. They always seem to pop up everywhere else. It's not fair. It's not right, but I know a lot of vendors, big ones, that used to, their whole business plan was based on them not paying their contractors, or they would pay a little bit just to get them going. And there's a real big one that used to be their business plan. They took great pride in driving a lot of mom and pop tower companies out of business. And it sucks. It's not fair. It's not right. And I think they mended their ways because what you have to do when someone doesn't pay, when they have no intention of paying, you have to take the extra effort to make sure you take them to claims court, whether it's small claims court or whatever. You have to make sure that you file to get your money back. And also, don't ever do work for them again. What these big companies do, they say, well, I'll pay you if you do the next job. And they give them a little bit of money, but not all the money that the company's owed. And they say, well, if you do the next job, or the next 10 jobs, I'll pay you for the first 10 jobs. Listen, you can't do business that way. It's easy for me to say sitting here, right? I know you're thinking, well, I need to work. I need this. I need that. Listen, a lot of companies that have done business this way have went bankrupt. And I'd like to think that's been cleaned up in the industry, but I still hear about it all the time. A lot of guys, you know, they pull fast ones. They'll have one crew do it and they won't have another crew do it. Make sure you know what it takes to close out the job. I know I talk about scope of works all the time, but Just make sure you know what the milestone is. Understand what the scope of work should be. I understand when you're a small company, you got to take a day off or a couple days off to go to court. That costs you money because you're not working. But to go and file the paperwork really hurts the other company, especially when they start to get 10 or 15 companies that file paperwork against them, maybe a lien, and then maybe in a dream world, it'd be a class action suit because they're not paying anybody. And it goes public. That's the important thing. And don't ever work for them again. Make them find other contractors. I know there's a lot of games they play. They'll get someone to do 90% of the work, and then they'll pay someone else a day to finish it, pay them, but they won't pay the original guy because they didn't reach a milestone. Get a contract. Get it in writing. Get the scope of work. Understand what the milestones were and clearly define the assumptions and the exceptions. So if they pull a stunt like that, you can take them to court. You can take them to small claims court, and you have a written documentation. It's not your word against their word. You have it in writing of what was supposed to happen and how they brought somebody else in and screwed you. You have it in writing that you got screwed. So they should pay you for at least the work that you have done. All right. You understand? I'm just saying, guys, you know, I'm not trying to be a jerk about this, but I don't like to see you get screwed. That's all. And I think sometimes we have to band together as different companies and hold these people accountable. I just do. I think they need to be held accountable. So back to the underbidder. Let's get back to that. If you underbid, obviously, you have to be prepared to take a loss. You know, that's what it means to underbid. You take a loss. You want to work. You want to beat out the competition for whatever reason. Chances are margins are going to be super low. It'd be nice if you still made some money or if you made enough money to cover your expenses and you still got the job done. Now, if you like change orders, contractors like change orders because it adds money to the bottom line. However, customers, they get a little peeved when they start getting a lot of change orders. There's one after another after another. If you have a good scope of work, again, does it make sense for so many change orders? Was something missed in a big way? That's why Tiger teams get so much work, you know, because something was missed in a big way and they'd go out and do a lot of extra work. So what I'm saying is if you have the change orders, that's great. However, if your reputation is that you get a lot of change orders, that's going to hurt you on future bids. I know customers say about that all the time that they don't want to work with people that's just going to flood them with change orders. So again, write a good scope. Make sure you understand what the work is and make sure you understand the assumptions and the exclusions and you won't have to worry about change orders. It's really that simple. So I'm looking at that. What would a perfect world be? To get paid on time every time. But I go into this because a lot of times the terms suck. Most people want net 30. They want to get paid 30 days within 30 days of the completion of the project. A lot of customers want net 120. Really hard for me to say that, but that's what they want. They want net 120 because 120 days gives them an extra 2 months to really work it out, you know, 3 months, I guess. So usually you got to go somewhere in between net 60, net 30, but net 30 is ideal. Now, for all you customers out there that listen to this and you think it's not fair, you should get net 120. Sometimes they're net 190. You got to remember that the contracts are paying their employees weekly or biweekly. They can't piss around for 3 or 4 months to get paid and float the money. It's tough for a smaller contractor. Now, if you have a bigger contractor and a big company, and trust me, I know like a lot of the OEMs when they were doing their own deployments, like Ericsson. Ericsson's a great example. They can float money for a long time. They have a big well of money that they can just pull from. And when they get paid, they expect to make it all up. So if Ericsson is probably going to push for like a net 60, you know that they probably have like a net 90 or a net 120 with their customer. They seem to bend over backwards for some of them. Because the end customer, a lot of carriers, they want you to help finance their network. Not all of them, but a few of them. And it makes it tough to do business that way, okay, especially on large deployments. But if you're a big company and you can float the money, way to go. So when you're an underbidder and you're floating money for that long, it's going to be tough. If you are an underbidder and you go with a long net term, net 120, because you want the business, be ready to float the business or float the money for that long. Something a lot of people don't understand about this too is when you do Net 120, you got to do the work first. So let's say you do 3, 6, 4 months of work. And when the work's done, then you can bill. So you still have to float all that money while you're doing the work. That's why a lot of these smaller tower companies, their milestones are when they finish a site. I finish this site, send a bill. I finish this site, send a bill. You keep sending bills, or you commit to 2 or 3 sites getting done because you want that steady influx of cash so you can pay your employees, pay your expenses, pay for the fuel, and so on. That's what a lot of people don't understand. So what do we have to do here to sum it all up? I gave you all the things about underbidding. If you can, be the best worker. That's the ideal thing to do. Quality matters. Good work matters. That's going to be the key thing that keeps bringing people back. However, you know, a lot of customers out there say, yeah, they do great work, but they're just so damned expensive. That's a problem too. So you got to find it somewhere in between. But one thing you can do if you do great work, figure out a way to automate your processes and make things go quicker. Figure out efficiencies that you can build into the job. That's going to really make it different. The more efficient it is, the better it is, the happier the customer is going to be, the more repeat work you're going to get. Because I do know a lot of guys that they're the best at what they do. They may take too long. They may be too expensive. You have to find that balance. And balance is what it's all about. All right, everyone. Be smart, be safe, pay attention to safety, okay? Look out for yourselves out there because it's a dangerous world and you live in it. See ya.